What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to John Kropczyk and Larry Rifkin's America Trends. And John, there is a trend in our country that is undeniable. It's something that is popping up everywhere. You can't go more than 3 to 4 blocks without seeing an urgent care center.
I'm not sure. I don't know how this business works. I mean, because here the hospitals are spending all this money outward. I don't know. These places aren't open later, so they're not really taking load off the emergency room.
Well, no. I don't think that's necessarily true. I do think that when they do communicate what it is that they do, and we will do that in this podcast, as opposed to what you really should go to an emergency room for, people will often choose to go to an urgent care center.
I agree, but I think they only do like 9 to 5 most of these urgent care, which you know, or to 7, which...
Well, John, it's like the state of Connecticut where we live, where we now, because of budget problems, we only leave these rest areas open from 8:30 in the morning until 2:30 in the afternoon. Now, I think it's documented that nobody has to go to the bathroom outside of those hours. Right, John?
I'm sure there's some study somewhere that proves that.
leave it to the state to do that. No, but John, I think their hours are a little more flexible than that. But having said that, you're right that there are going to be times when they're closed and you end up inexorably going to an emergency room. But the urgent care centers, for a lot of things, you know, a little sprain or somebody's got a fever and they don't know quite what to do. And rather than waiting this interminable time in the emergency rooms, and they're taking a lot of pressure.
It's torture.
Yeah.
Those emergency rooms. But
no, that's only in room 4.
Okay.
Torture. That's it. Yeah.
But inevitably, it seems like most of your emergencies happen, at least for me,
at night.
At night.
Yeah, seemingly. Seemingly. Well, make certain you get it done before 8 o'clock, because I think some are open later.
Okay. Yeah.
But with all that said, these urgent care centers are really filling a void in our culture. There's no question about it. Or they wouldn't be developing in the way that they have. But I had a lot of questions, as you know, John, about this. So I decided to go right to the top.
You went to the source.
Right. No, well, that's the way to do it. We went to the Urgent Care Association of America, really, and we talked to Laurel Stymanoff, and she's a physical therapist as well as being the chief executive officer. And we really bonded over the PT because my wife is a PT. But she was a really wonderful spokesperson for the growth and the development of this urgent care industry. And so I was curious because I had read all these articles about the growth and it was phenomenal. So we wanted to find out the logistics, wanted to ask some of the questions that you might ask as an individual thinking about going to an urgent care center, when, why, and who will pay for it. All of these questions.
All good questions.
Were they all good?
Well, they were all good questions.
Oh, you're grading my questions now, John. Yeah. Well, that's okay. John and I have been together long enough. He certainly has heard me ask more questions than anyone should. But listen, we have some more questions on the table today on America Trends about this urgent care industry. And I think we've got to get to it quickly.
I think we should.
It's urgent.
It's urgent, yes.
Laurel Stymanoff is with us, and she is the chief executive officer for the Urgent Care Association here in America. And Laurel, you are sitting atop an industry that seems to be thriving and growing, at least if my neighborhood and my community is any example. Wow, what's going on out there?
Well, and you are correct. You know, we have been, as the Urgent Care Association, monitoring the growth of the industry, you know, year over year. And we have some pretty strict criteria in terms of how we define an urgent care. So our number is sometimes a little lower than you see other people quote, but we are really looking for that, you know, accessible 7 days a week, typically walk-ins accepted during all hours of operation, x-ray on site, lab on site. So those are kind of our criteria that we look for. And it grows, you know, significantly. We look at it monthly. We look at it monthly by state. And right now we believe, you know, for a relatively nascent industry, we're up to about 8,500 what we consider qualified centers across the country right now.
And place urgent care centers in the context of, say, a local doctor's practice and a hospital emergency room. Where does this fit in terms of services and the usage?
Typically in between. You know, the typical primary care doctor, you know, may not have x-ray on site, may not have the lab that we have. You know, I think it is the beauty of an urgent care. It can really be a one-stop shop when you come in because all of these services are under one roof. And then you have, obviously, the emergency room. And from a price point, I don't know that there's really that much of a difference, total price point, between a primary care doctor's office and an urgent care. I might even say the urgent care could be a better value because of all the services you're getting under that one roof. But you're probably going to see a higher copay in general if you have commercial insurance. So it might be, you know, $35 to see your primary care doctor and $50 to go to an urgent care. It could be several hundred dollars to go to an ER, where, depending on what study you read, there was one out of Texas recently where they looked at, you know, hundreds of thousands of claims, and it was actually 10 times higher in the emergency room in terms of the cost compared to the urgent care center for the exact same diagnosis. So, you know, that person could maybe have a little higher acuity, that type of thing going in there. You know, it's kind of hard to tell sometimes from just a diagnosis. But nevertheless, that's a big delta in terms of the price point.
And emergency rooms have such a bad rap in terms of the wait time and the like. And yet there is confusion, I think, among a lot of people as to when do I go to an urgent care center versus the emergency room.
I would agree that that is still out there. I think it gets better year over year. You know, we as an urgent care association are going to celebrate our 15th year anniversary in the next coming months. And, you know, and we kind of emerged with the industry. So it is relatively new. And, you know, you do still have that, you know, group of people who are confused about whether it's ED or urgent care, but it's less and less. And right now, you know, in terms of transfers from urgent cares to EDs, it's very much aligned with what a typical doctor's office would be. You know, sometimes it's via a phone call that someone's calling their primary care doctor, and it's the same thing in the emergency or the urgent care. But it's about 2-3% of patients get transferred from the urgent care to an ED when they essentially didn't triage correctly. Now, the reverse, I would say, is very different. There are many people, compared to what study you look at, you know, we've seen it everywhere from 30% to the one study that was done out of Texas that said 60% of those going to the ED had the exact same top 25 diagnoses as those going to the urgent care center. So, you know, when people say to me, boy, are you concerned about the fact that there's telemedicine and retail clinics and all of these other kind of on-demand industries that have popped up as a result of, you know, urgent care's popularity and the, you know, the rise of the consumer, we really say, you know, there's so much still sitting there in the emergency department that can really, you know, once we get the patients to the right place, to the right setting, at the right time, you know, there's going to be plenty to go around for everyone, and the emergency departments will be there to serve the emergent patient.
And who owns these urgent care centers? I would imagine that if this is a profitable business, that a lot of hospitals and large primary care providers and others would want to get into the game. Who is owning most of the urgent care centers, or spread it out for us so we understand it better?
Right. It is really diverse. As our industry is becoming diverse with more and more specialization, but it is very diverse. We have everyone from Optum, which is, you know, essentially, you know, an arm of United Healthcare. So we have a payer owning one of the biggest groups in the country and growing quickly, to the single physician owner in, you know, Northern California or somewhere else. It is, you know, it really started largely as an industry grown by physicians, many of them emergency department physicians who noticed that all these people were coming into the ED who didn't need to be in the ED. And now it's very diverse, from payers to, you know, investors to, we still have the physician out there owning them. So it's a diverse ownership, and hospitals have come into the industry. They were maybe a little later in the game than the physicians, but they really recognize urgent care as kind of that front door. As they look at the, changing their strategy from inpatient hospital services to where medicine is going with much more of an ambulatory care service industry, you almost have to have urgent care because such a large number of patients come to us who are unaffiliated with a primary care doctor and therefore unaffiliated really with a particular health system that, you know, all of a sudden you come in and you do pick up, boy, you know, you're now 52 years old, you have no primary care doctor, and you have diabetes. So we now need to, you know, you need to establish yourself with a primary care physician who can monitor that over time.
Have a lot of people come to you because of the Affordable Care Act? Because I was reading where one of the biggest problems faced by urgent care centers is the fact that some insurance carriers, obviously you talked about United and Optum, they may be apart from this, are not accepting, you know, the usage of urgent care as readily as you might like.
You know, we have not noticed that really as much in the payer world. You know, the payers have pretty much, you know, acknowledge the difference between, you know, the emergency department and the urgent care center. I think what I see somewhat as a barrier is with the commercial payers, you know, not necessarily Medicare, but the commercial payers themselves sometimes box urgent care centers into providing exclusively emergent care. So there may be a clause in my contract with someone that says, I can only see urgent care patients, I can't do any follow-up care, I can't do any wellness care. So if you come to me with needing a tetanus shot because you haven't had one in 10-plus years, I can't administer that and submit that to your insurance. But if you come to me and you stepped on a rusty nail, I can give you a tetanus shot and have that included. So they box us in some ways, and to not allow follow-up care is short-sighted as well, because so many people we see are those who are geographically displaced from their primary care doctor. So I might be someone who works in Boise, Idaho, but for the next 2 weeks I'm working a contract in Boston, Massachusetts, and I get sick, you know, and I have pneumonia, so I go to an urgent care center, but now my contract precludes me from seeing that patient again, and that patient really needs follow-up. So, you know, I think sometimes we get boxed into certain criteria that don't make sense in terms of the people who are really coming inside our doors.
And has the Affordable Care Act had any effect on the growth of urgent care?
I would say minimally. And the reason I say minimally is, at least in my opinion, we have been an industry that has taken care of patients who are uninsured long before I think the rest of the, you know, world kind of beamed up to this. You know, you have the people who may have an income, but it is not adequate enough to go out and also provide health insurance for their family. But urgent care centers have long had very transparent pricing. So you might come into me and I might have a medical discount program that we call it, and it's just exclusively for my urgent care centers. But it's very clear to you that, you know, if you come in with this or this, you know, this is exactly what you'll have to pay, and it's clear to them up front. And so they may make a decision to just use that urgent care almost like a primary care provider because it's an affordable option for them.
What about consumer behavior that has helped to fuel this growth in urgent care? What is it that we're looking for from you that you're able to provide that perhaps primary care doctors or emergency rooms shouldn't or can't?
You know, that's a great question. I think what we offer, obviously, is accessible care 7 days a week. You know, I was traveling last week, and then I knew I had to travel again on Monday, and it was like, when am I going to take care of myself? I'm on the road this week, and I leave Monday first thing in the morning again. So it really comes down to, I think, the fact that we are there 7 days a week, and we're there in the evenings. And like I say, we can provide so much under one roof, depending on kind of the regulatory environment. We might even be able to dispense your meds so you don't have to go to a pharmacy. So you come in, you might need an x-ray, you know, you may have pneumonia, you might need an x-ray, you may need some lab work done, and you need to see a medical provider, we can do that. And then you may need some type of a medication dispensed, and we can do that there as well. So it for someone who really feels sick, this is a very convenient way to receive care. And a huge percentage of urgent care centers also offer the opportunity for you to just, essentially get in line. So you click in, and they'll call you when your exam room is going to be ready in the next 20 minutes. So you don't have to sit in the reception area. You can, be ill at home, in your own bed. So I think it's just a very consumer focused industry where we say, what does the consumer want, and we built our model around that. And we're probably one of the first to do that. Then now we see obviously lots of others getting into that same kind of mindset.
And what are the most common conditions that are treated in an urgent care center? I think we might be able to guess, but why don't you tell us?
Well, certainly upper respiratory infections, pharyngitis, urinary tract infections. If it has itis in it, we might be seeing it. We see skin conditions. We see a lot of conjunctivitis, or commonly known as pink eye. Those are the types of things that we see. So, for the most part, the vast majority of what we see are illness, and then, maybe 20 to 25% are the injuries, the weekend warriors, the sprained ankles, I fell down and broke my wrist, where we can stabilize that fracture if it's, not a compound fracture. So, we do have a fair amount of the weekend warriors. A number of urgent care centers are getting into head trauma. So, someone who has, concussion, they're good at screening for that now in terms of does that person really need to be in ED, or can they be seen and followed outside of the emergency department. But if you really want the top five, they're all going to be in that upper respiratory infection, pharyngitis, otitis media, which is ear infections.
And what about the geographic distribution? In other words, a lot of those things we think of as winter involved in the Northeast and the Midwest and those colder places. Is that accurate? And what kind of void are you filling in different types of communities?
Great question. I actually entered the urgent care world in the state of Arizona, where we have winter visitors, once again, geographically displaced from their physician. They may be from Canada, they may be from Wyoming and Colorado, and they winter in Arizona. So, what a great service. And we saw great growth in urgent care in Florida as well, largely due to this very transient population, I think, that comes and goes. Urgent care plays a huge role in terms of this nation's safety net during the flu season. You can't, it's hard enough now to get in to see a primary care doctor. There was a study recently that I think it said the average time to see a primary care doctor was 29 days, and that was done by Merritt Hawkins. And so, 29 days, if you have the flu, and, some of these antivirals for the flu, if it's truly influenza, need to be administered within the first 48 hours. Well, if you can't even get in to see your doctor beyond 48 hours, you can't get that antiviral. So, the volume, you are correct, in urgent care centers go up considerably, for the most part, for all of us, in, the flu season, so fall now into, March of next year, probably. But you have those that, are on Cape Cod, and they're busiest in the summertime, or, so you have summering communities, or those that sit at the base of a ski slope. So it varies kind of, I think, based
location,
on the
location, location,
location.
By the way, who am I going to see when I go to an urgent care center? Because we did a podcast about the paucity of doctors who are coming out and available to us, and many going into specialties rather than primary care. So how do you staff all these urgent care centers?
Most urgent care centers are built on, that kind of physician model, but certainly they will use PAs and nurse practitioners as well as, most physicians, because of this paucity of primary care physicians out there, have really had to go to that model and start using these advanced practice clinicians to help them administer care. At the Urgent Care Association, we have an accreditation program, we have a certification program. Certification is really about scope. And we still say in that certification program, you know, we want to know there's a medical director, an MD or DO, who has oversight of the clinical care, the clinical policies that are established within that organization, et cetera. And I think that is pretty much the model still that you see across the country, that there is absolutely MD or DO involvement, so you have physicians heading up the care. But the care could be delivered by a PA or an NP consistent with the licensure laws of the state that are there to protect the public.
Laurel Stymanoff is with us, and she is the head of the Urgent Care Association. And herself, she's a physical therapist, as is my wife, so I have a lot of interest in what physical therapists have to say. Let me ask you about diagnostic testing, because many of us go to Quest or one of those types of facilities. Where does the Urgent Care Center fit in terms of, well, you know, kind of sticking the needle to us, if you will?
I did not know your wife was a physical therapist. That's wonderful. I like her already. So in terms of lab, as I said, in order to meet the certification criteria and how we vet, you know, is this, you know, what we call it a traditional urgent care center, there is a lab, and they may do different levels of testing. There's what we call a CLIA-waived lab, and they do point-of-care testing, and then there's a moderate lab where they might do more comprehensive testing right there in their lab itself. But if it is a type of test that is not provided, so, you know, or they want to send something out maybe for a culture and sensitivity, they all have relationships with those labs that, you know, you mentioned that, you know, we'll come by and pick up things up, and then we get the results back, you know, typically by the next day, so we can call that patient and follow up and let them know what their lab results were. But the thing is that, you know, you don't necessarily have to go to another lab. We can, as you said, we can take that blood sample right there. I'll say it not quite as
graphically as I do.
But we can take that there and send it out. So, because like I say, we really try and make it so you don't have to go here and then over here to get an x-ray and over here to get your lab work and then over here to go to a pharmacy if we don't have to.
Now, in a great report that you put out, and we'll tell people perhaps how they can get this report, you say that telehealth is a fast-growing service in many urgent care centers that utilize telemedicine. How is that being put forward and utilized in this fast-paced world of ours?
You know, the providers who choose urgent care are particularly adept at looking at a patient that, you know, you might not have a five-year history with, just as ER doctors are, but, you know, you might not have a five-year history with, and peeling back the onion and saying, okay, tell me about this. Do you have a history of this? Anyone in your family? Have you been traveling? You know, the kinds of questions you need to ask to make that assessment of that patient who's standing in front of you right now to come up with the best plan of care. And so that's just the same skill set, I think, that you need in telemedicine. Urgent care is one of those industries that, you know, we may be busy from, you know, crazy busy from 8 to 10 in the morning, and then there might be a lull from 10 to 3 in the afternoon till people start getting out from work, and then you're busy again till 8 o'clock at night. So, you know, you have kind of these natural lulls in the day, and so they can, you know, pick up some of those telemed calls, whether they put the service in there themselves and it's their own telemed service that they have, or they just team up with another organization and accept some of their, you know, calls that they can triage to them. So, you know, it can be multiple ways, I think, that they kind of put their toe in the water or jump in completely. But we did see a pretty quick ramp from 1 year to the next. You know, I think last year it was still in the teens, you know, maybe 14 or 15%. But it is a trajectory that we anticipate will continue to increase just because, as I said, the types of providers that we have in those centers. And it certainly can be used as a service. You know, I mentioned the patient who might be traveling who has pneumonia. Maybe that patient who, you know, is feeling better in a couple days doesn't need to come back into the urgent care, but we could set up a telemed appointment then saying, you know, that was a pretty serious, you know, diagnosis you had. Your chest x-ray didn't look so great. We want to know how you're feeling right now, and you can have that face-to-face. So there are a number of ways where urgent care centers, I think, are going to begin and have begun and will continue to use technology to even better that patient experience.
I would imagine that one of the reasons there's been growth in urgent care is the fact, as you say, we're a 24/7 type of society. But beyond that, that there's a lot of satisfaction with what they find when they come to an urgent care center, as opposed to a doctor's office, which, because of a lot of factors, can be a rather disappointing experience. And oftentimes you have doctors who are holding onto that doorknob, just waiting to get out because they've got to see X number of patients within an hour. So tell us what you're finding about patient satisfaction.
It is, as you said, I think because the model was built around the consumer, you know, they're very focused on making sure that we manage that time that that patient's in there. So one of our typical metrics that we're looking at is patient throughput. You know, from the minute that patient hit that front door till when that patient is being discharged, you know, what is that timing? And never, you know, at the cost of quality. You know, if someone has a laceration and it's a deep laceration and there's quite a bit of work that needs to be done on that patient, they're going to be there longer. But, you know, for the typical patient that comes in with pharyngitis or that type of thing that can be managed, you know, it's a typical, you know, kind of protocol. Let's get their vitals. Let's triage them. You know, let's make sure that, you know, that there's nothing more serious going on here. Maybe do a strep test. You know, that throughput time tends to be very consistently well under an hour with a wait time of less than 20 minutes. And so, you know, it is a very patient-focused model and very consumer-oriented. Check in online, get in line, we'll call you when your room's ready, or we offer some intermittent appointments that you can just sign up on and come in so you don't have to sit there in a waiting room with a sick person next to you. So I think it's just, you know, that's why the satisfaction is high, because of the model that it's been built on.
Are these urgent care centers really on the threshold of becoming the new doctor's office? I mean, over time, because you're experiencing such growth and there is a lot of money in this, in the billions of dollars, do you see this really beginning to take on a whole new dimension in terms of its importance in the delivery system in many communities?
I believe that urgent care can and should be an essential part of the healthcare continuum. And that it really comes from the fact that if it really, you know, if we're looking at this study that was just done, you know, last year from 2014 to 2017, and, you know, the time it takes to get in to see a primary care doctor, urgent care centers can and do collaborate with the primary care community. And when you think about it, you know, the primary care doctor, in my mind, should be absolutely essential, and urgent care should not try and replace that person who may have chronic diseases, they need disease management, they need someone monitoring, as I said, something like their diabetes. And you know, let's allow the primary care doctors to do that and you know, have that, continue to have that relationship and manage their practice that way. But then when someone just happens to have a laceration on a Tuesday at 5 o'clock, you know, don't clog up that doctor's office, then go to the urgent care, and then let's make sure the urgent care and that primary care doctor continue to collaborate, that primary care doctor who knows, or the, you know, the family medicine or the medical home knows that patient had that laceration if something should come up, and, you know, more collaborative, where the urgent cares really are offloading not only the ED, but the overworked primary care doctor to handle the, you know, more emergent things that come up, so that they can be great at disease management and the ERs can be great at taking care of true emergencies.
If somebody listening to this said, well, you know, I've never really thought about using an urgent care center, but I see them popping up around my community, maybe I should put them into my phone so I have that number ready. What would you say to them about, you know, the utilization of an urgent care center, and how do they assure themselves that the one that just opened up next door is actually the one they should go to because of quality? What are the assurances that someone listening might have that all urgent care centers are created equal or are not, and how do you determine which one might be best for you?
Well, I think we need to keep in mind, you know, urgent care centers are regulated just like every other doctor's office and possibly more, because, you know, there might be also the radiology board that is looking at them because they've got the X-ray on site. They have CLIA or COLA, which are lab regulatory agencies looking at their labs. So, you know, when sometimes I think people say, oh, these urgent care centers are unregulated. They're regulated. they have to abide by all of the same federal, state-level laws, licensure laws, et cetera, as anybody else. So they're regulated. But then, you know, there are those who pursue things like the Urgent Care Association. We have an accreditation program. It, too, is relatively new. It's about 4 years old. But, you know, of the 8,500 urgent cares out there in the country, I think by the end of the year we'll have accredited about 1,000 of them. And that involves, you know, an on-site survey, a number of criteria that they have to meet to demonstrate that they have overarching quality programs, that, you know, how they're vetting their physicians and hires and how they're managing their licensure processes and HR processes and background checks. And there are a number of criteria that they have to meet. So certainly you could go on the, you know, our website, ucaoa.org, and, you know, click on Find a Center, and it's going to tell you whether it's an accredited center. But as I say, you know, that doesn't mean it. I think it shows that certainly someone has come in there and surveyed that center, and they have had to go through a process and demonstrate that they have all of these things in place. But as I said, you know, urgent care centers, like any other physician offices, are regulated by all of those other organizations and probably some more.
Well, a fascinating topic because it's really almost omnipresent today in so many communities. And John and I noticed in our own community that they have been growing by leaps and bounds. So we wanted to get you on today. Laurel Stymanoff from the Urgent Care Association of America. She's the Chief Executive Officer. And Laurel, if people want more information from your organization, perhaps you can repeat your website and the information they might go to.
Sure. They can, you know, our phone number, you know, how to find us, it's all there, and it's ucaoa.org, as in Urgent Care Association of America.org.
Okay, thank you so much for being with us, and I'm going to think of you the next time I find myself in an urgent care center, and that could be almost any time now, because that's the whole point of having an urgent care center available to you.
Exactly. I hope not, but I'm glad that they'll be there for you if you do.
Absolutely. Laurel, thanks again. A pleasure to have you on America Trends.
Thank you, Larry. I appreciate it.